The reading tonight comes from Matthew, chapter 5, verses 1 through 12. Seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you, when men revile you and persecute you and utter all sorts of evil against you falsely on my account, rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so men persecuted the prophets who were before you.
For these beautiful hymns and for the prayers and the reading, let's be thankful. I express this to you often, and it always is meaningful to me, what you mean to me as people and as friends. I think the 23rd Psalm has taken on, in fact, I know it has, taken on new meaning to me, having come here to be with you. I think the expression, He makes me to lie down in green pastures, has never meant so much as it means to me now. I look on you as green pastures in the sense that it's a very pleasant place to be, and I'm thankful for being here with you. May God bless us as we study together. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, in verse 5, the statement that Jesus made, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. With this statement, he introduces to us another stranger, a new concept. It was a concept, I'm convinced, that at least shocked the Jews. But I think it did more than shock them. I think it offended them. You see, the Jew, he had his idea of inheriting the earth, but it was purely through military conquest. The Jew very much was concerned with and was aware of the concept of inheriting the earth. But he didn't have in mind doing it through meekness. He had his plans already laid out. And it involved simply, first of all, throwing off the Roman yoke and then getting his armies in shape and marching out into the world on one vast maneuver of conquest. He did not have any place in his philosophy or in his way of looking at life, this thing of meekness. If you'd like to see a modern-day application of this concept of the Jew, look at the Israel of the present day. Israel today is not known for its meekness. Look at the wars that have been fought recently. Meekness did not characterize the people of the Jews, and I think they recognize this. The Arab people are much more tended to be meek than are the Israeli people. But nevertheless, I think Jesus Christ shocked and perhaps offended the Jew when he told them, Blessed are the meek, for they'll inherit the earth. But he not only offended the Jew, he went counter to everything that the entire world in general holds to be absolutely essential to success in our present day. We don't have any room in the thinking of the world for meekness. Rather, we have the philosophy, do unto others before they do to you. Or the philosophy, demand your rights. Stand up for your rights. March for your rights. Sit in for your rights. do whatever else is necessary in order to obtain and secure what you rightfully have coming to you. And this is the philosophy that pretty well guides our course today. And we're more interested in our rights than we are in our responsibilities. So Jesus Christ, to this kind of a situation today, speaks to us. And he says to us, as he said to the Jews of his own day, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." This particular beatitude, like the other beatitudes that we'll be studying and have already studied too, this one, like the others, is built upon that which precedes it. It's built upon these other two beatitudes that went before. But there's something different about this beatitude. Whereas the poor in spirit and those who mourn, I think primarily and at least initially have to do with a man's relationship to God, this one here about the meekness or the meek people has to do, I think, at least in a very practical and tangible way, as it relates to a man and his actions and his attitudes toward his fellow man. Now, meekness is related to God. Meekness has its place as it relates a man to God. There's no question about it. And it can best be summed up simply in the word surrender. The surrender of a man to God's will. This would be characterized, or this would be expressed as meekness. It is very evident in the action of baptism. When a person comes and surrenders himself to God's will visibly, this, I think, is an attribute, or it is a quality that can be expressed, that expresses meekness in this action of baptism. But it's not that that I want us to emphasize tonight. We'll make mention of it again next Sunday night. But the thing I want you to see tonight is meekness as it relates to people. This particular beatitude, I think, I get the impression that it is the first test that a man who has been made aware of his sinful condition before God and made aware of it to the point that he mourns and more or less just sinks to his knees in tearful surrender or in tearful remorse over his sins, I get the impression then that when Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek," I get the visual impression of a man who, having been sunk that way and weeping over his sins, he then washes his face, anoints himself with oil, puts on a new dress or new cloth or new clothing, and goes out and begins to associate and to stir among the people. Then is when this thing of meekness is tested to see whether or not he really and truly has been poor in spirit, to see whether or not his mourning has been mourning or moaning. And I think it shows up in whether or not he's meek. And we find that this is, I think, the first practical test as a man begins to relate to other people. I want to talk to you very briefly about what meekness is not and what it is. First of all, meekness is not weakness, but I think most of us think that it is. Moses was not a weak man, but he was meek. Abraham was not a weak man, but he was meek. Jesus Christ, our Lord, was certainly not a weak man, but he was meek. And his servant, the Apostle Paul, was not a weak man, but he was meek. So really, meekness has nothing to do with weakness. In fact, it's at the opposite pole. These things polarize at two extremes. Weakness is one extreme, you might say, of bad. The meekness quality is not weakness, it's double strength, as we'll notice in a few moments. But meekness has nothing really to do with weakness, and I wish for once and for all that you could get it out of your mind, if it is there. Get it out of your mind. It has nothing to do with weakness. Meekness really is not niceness. You know, some people are just born nice. The chemical makeup, you know, of their body just blends in beautifully. They're compatible. They're congenial. The whole attitude of their mind is one of very gentle beauty. And they're just the way they're born. Other people are born in the objective case and they have a back set. But that's just the way they're born. Meekness is not really niceness in that respect. A lot of dogs and cats are born, you see, with this same kind of personality of niceness. Some of them are born without it. I remember an aunt of mine who had a blue-tongued chow. And if you've ever seen a blue-tongued chow, he is the most nasty, vicious, cantankerous, obnoxious canine I think ever born. I do believe this particular dog, they had to chain him. I had to keep him behind a wire fence, and if anybody ever happened to wander through there, his life wasn't worth that much. The fellow was just completely obnoxious. And if you'd turned him loose, he would have devoured half the neighborhood by noon. He was just that kind of a canine. But other dogs are not like that. We've got a little pup, just as nice as he can be. The kids can just do anything in the world to him, and he wouldn't hurt a flea. Well, he'd hurt a flea, but he wouldn't hurt a child. But he's just that way. That's just that's his personality. He was born nice, I think. But really, meekness is not just having been born nice. It's a quality that characterizes people who have the Spirit of God. It is not natural to human nature. It is unnatural in the sense that it is that which comes as a part of being a part of the Spirit of God. But also, meekness is not shyness. Meekness is not, what you would call, it's not effeminacy. Meekness is not fear. Meekness is not timidity. Meekness just simply does not have to do with these attributes that I've just mentioned, of weakness or niceness or timidity or shyness or fear or effeminacy. Meekness has nothing to do with any of these things. Well, what is meekness? I think it can be best illustrated, and it can be very aptly illustrated, in a relating a movie called The Gladiators. If you saw the movie called The Gladiators, you'll remember the one of the principal characters was this huge, giant hulk of a man, Demetrius, who was the slave. He was a Christian slave. And the master of Demetrius was a Christian, and so was the master's wife. And for sport, as the Christians were being persecuted, the wife of this man, Demetrius, the wife of his master, was put at a stake in the arena. She was tied there, and a wild bull was put in the arena. And this slave was put there to protect her from the bull. Well, I remember the tenseness of the occasion, and here this man was, and finally, in protecting this woman, he grabbed the bull by the horns, and you could just see those muscles ripple, you know, and just the bull's neck began to turn until finally there was this sickening crunch, and it was the bull's neck. And if you can imagine taking a bull and breaking his neck with your two bare hands, that's strength that I can't begin to even imagine. And yet that strong hulk of a man went over then and untied this woman and very gently carried her in his arms gracefully out of the arena. Now that's meekness. And I don't know of a better way of expressing it. It was that man who had the ability to destroy, harnessing that ability and walking very gently and gracefully out of the arena with this woman in his arms. Meekness is a 440 cubic inch engine under the foot of a 16-year-old boy moving away from a red light without laying rubber. Now that's meekness. And proceeding within the speed limit when the police aren't around. Now that's meekness. Those of you who have such an engine as that, I suspect that it has never experienced such a thing as meekness. My going away in this Volkswagen from a red light and not laying rubber is not meekness at all. I just put away, but who can do any more? You couldn't do anything else in a Volkswagen. But you see what meekness is. It's this thing of power under control. It's this thing of doing more in the sense of doing less. And I'll explain that in just a moment. But meekness is a young boy playing with a younger brother. A boy perhaps who may be 14 years old playing with an 8-year-old brother and letting him be included in his activities. That's meekness. Meekness, the definition of it, the word praos in the New Testament is the word for meekness. And it has to do with gentleness, but it has to do more with power under control. It's kind of like this. It's like a raging torrential river rushing down or out of its banks. That's meekness in the sense that that river then being dammed and all of this rushing mighty force, destructive and powerful in all of its force, coming down the country. And yet when someone dams that river and then generates that force into electricity and channels it into the homes of people in the form of light and heat, this light and heat is what you might call meekness. The force and the raging river having been harnessed and channeled and converted into something that was useful, that's meekness. That's a very picturesque, I think, description of what meekness is. It's this power under control. Jesus Christ gave a figure as he elaborates on the Beatitudes and the rest of the Sermon on the Mount. In chapter 5, this very same chapter, in verse 38, he says, "You've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist one who is evil. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you to take your coat, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Meekness actually is going the second mile when you have the right to stop at the end of the first mile. Now, to the Jew, this meant something very specific and very particular. It called to mind, whether it was the Roman written law or the unwritten code that governed occupational forces in these foreign lands, it was either a written code or an unwritten code of conduct that a Roman soldier had every right to insist that the occupied nations, the people of those occupied nations, would accompany them and carry their load for at least 1 mile. Consequently, whenever a Roman soldier came up to people in the Jewish nation there in Israel, a Roman soldier had every right to tell this Jew, "You carry this burden of mine for 1 mile and get going." And the Jew, it seems, was obligated to do that. At the end of that mile, the Roman soldier knew that the Jew had carried out his responsibility to him, and he was to take his load and go on his way. Jesus is saying, when you get to the end of that first mile with your Roman oppressor, rather than saying, "Here it is," and then throwing it down and walking off, say, "Sir, you look tired. Let me carry this another mile for you." Now, that's what he was recommending. If anyone would compel you to go with him 1 mile, go with him 2. And I suspect that this was something that just thoroughly grated upon the nerves of the Jewish people as they considered and contemplated this kind of an atmosphere or this kind of an attitude toward the Roman oppressors. But that's what he was saying that they were to do. If someone would compel you to go 1 mile, go with him 2. I think this can be described and defined a bit further by defining it like this. Meekness is the foregoing of your own right in order to fill another person's need. In Romans, the 15th chapter, verses 1 through 3, we find this thing of meekness described. Though it isn't called meekness, it's called simply this: we who are strong ought to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, to edify him. For Christ didn't please himself, but as it is written, "The reproaches of those who reproached thee fell on me." Which drives us to the conclusion that what meekness is really is the foregoing of our rights in order to fill another person's need. You have a certain right. You also, as a Christian, have a right to forego that right. If in foregoing that right, you can fill another person's need, that's meekness. Let me illustrate it. Some years ago, one of our children, and you'll pardon me when I make references like this, but many of the illustrations that I see in life come from my own family. Not all of them are good. This one was extra good. In the meantime, there have been several back lapses from this, but this was good, and I was thankful and proud to see it. This particular boy had built an airplane, and it had taken him hour upon hour, day after day, week after week. This was quite an operation. He made it out of balsa wood, of course, by the plans, put the paper over it, painted it, put the decals, and this particular one was a gasoline motor-driven one. And so he mounted the motor on the frame, and the time came for the first flight, and they went out into the front yard. I was sitting in the house watching, and the motor was filled with gasoline, and they flipped it a couple of times, and here it went. The plane went right straight up and then came right back down, nose first, and hit the ground and kind of shook it up a bit, but it was all right. It could have been fixed and flown again. But by chance, there was a little girl about 7 years old or so visiting our house, and she was on one of the bicycles. And here she came, you know, just at the time that it hit the ground, and the wheel ran right over it, right across where the wings meet, and it just scrambled it like eggs. Well, this boy just hit the ceiling. I mean, he acted awful. He just said, "Oh, what have you done? You didn't have any right to do that. Get out of the way. You've torn up my..." And on he went, just having a fit. Well, this little girl was so shocked at having run over it and then to have been subjected to this outrage, she went into the house, packed her clothes, took her little bag, and was walking away from us and had gotten about half a block down from the house. She was going back home, but she lived miles from where we lived. Well, this boy turned and saw what had happened and saw her going away crying. Boy, he forgot his plane. He took off running after this little girl, caught up with her and put his arm around her and said, "Honey, it's all right. Don't you worry. It's all right. Don't worry about the plane. It doesn't amount to anything. You come on back. We want you to stay with us. We want you to play with us." Well, That's meekness. I think that's what meekness is. The plane was his by right. He had spent hours and hours working on it. And she did not have the right to be there on a bicycle and run over that plane. He just didn't have the right. And any way you looked at it, he was in the right and she was in the wrong. But when the time came that it came to decide between her feelings and her broken heart and a broken plane, this boy sacrificed his right and all that he'd put in the plane and went tearing out after the girl and said, "It's all right, you come on back. We don't want you to go home. You stay with us." And I thought it was a beautiful demonstration of what meekness is. There's another thing that happened some years ago. It's been probably 15 years ago now. We were building a building over in West Columbia, South Carolina. And we had secured the services of a man by the name of Jim Smith, who was the representative of the Butler Building. And we had gotten Jim and his company to build this building of ours, a Sunday school addition. And we had signed the contract, and he had signed it for a certain amount of money, about $19,000. And then when the building was finished and everything was secured, we were getting ready to go into it, one day he called me on the phone and said, "I hate to call you and say this." He said, "I don't have any right to be calling you at all. But," he said, "I've made a terrible mistake in the price." He said, "I have quoted you $1,000 less than what the cost actually should be." He said, "The cost of putting in the ceiling was $1,000, and I forgot to figure it in." But he said, "I don't have any right to call you. The building is yours at the price that I quoted." But he said, "That was my profit, and I felt like that I just couldn't say, I could not but say to you that I had made this mistake." Well, I didn't know what the brethren would do. I thought I knew what they would do. I told Mr. Smith, I said, "Well, don't lose any sleep over it. Don't worry about it. I'll get back in touch with you as soon as I get in touch with the church and see what they want to do." When I mentioned this problem to the church, those people, and all they are mill workers. They don't have any money. Those people work for less than what people in Searcy, Arkansas work. Those people are, they were just simply mill workers. And those people then, when they were told, though, the problem, without an exception, without a hesitation, those people said for me to tell the man, "We'll see that you get the money. Don't you worry about it. We'll pay you the $1,000. Without question, we'll pay it." They said, "We refuse to benefit from his mistake. We refuse to be the one that benefits while he's down. We're not going to kick him while he's down. We're going to see that he gets what is his due." I didn't know what it was called. I didn't realize that it was called meekness. I didn't realize, and they didn't realize, that it was called meekness. They just knew that they could not stand to see this man suffer a loss. They had every right to have that building at the price that was quoted. There's not a court in the land that would have said, "No, you people are obligated to pay this man $1,000 extra." Not a court in the land would have done that. But they didn't need a court in this land to cause them to do it. They had another court, and that court, well, they were answering to, and they said, "Right, we're going to see that this man receives his $1,000. And I thought, what a beautiful. And you know, I thought I knew what they would do, because they were people who were trying to follow Jesus Christ. That's what Jesus Christ would have done. Blessed are the meek, happy are the meek. And they were happy when they found that they were able to forego their right in order to fill another person's need. That makes you happy. And that's what Jesus Christ was talking about. But the second part of what he said was, "Blessed are the meek, for they'll inherit the earth." What does this mean? This is a very peculiar expression, and people, I think, have a hard time understanding what it does mean, and perhaps it's not all that clear. I do not think it means that at the second coming we're going to inherit the earth here. That's the common understanding of it, I think, among many people, religious people. I don't want to inherit this earth at the second coming. I don't care for a cinder, and that's about all that's going to be left of this place. It's going to be burned up with a fire and a heat that consumes it and all the works that are in it. So I don't think that that's what he's talking about. He may be talking about the inheriting of the new earth. Peter says we wait for a new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. And John talked about the new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God. But I don't think that really is what he's talking about, though that may be part of it. I believe that what he's talking about is this, that the meek people inherit this earth now, that this is God's means of conquering and capturing and subduing the earth, not by force, but by meekness, not by demanding your rights, but by foregoing your rights, not by doing just what's required of you, but by going beyond that, by going beyond the call of duty. This, I think it is saying, is God's means of conquering the earth. And if you can see that, I think you'll be recipient of this double blessing that comes when Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, for they'll inherit the earth. Let me give you an illustration of it. There's a footnote to this event that took place in South Carolina. The Sunday after it was decided by the church that we were going to provide this man this extra $1,000, and where it would come from, we didn't know. But the very next Sunday after that was decided, a check for $1,000 appeared in the collection plate that morning. Now, I can't explain to you the joy and the happiness and the enthusiasm and the hilarity and the laughing and the jumping up and down and the slapping each other on the back that took place that morning when the collection plate was counted and there was this check for $1,000. I can't explain to you the amazement on the face of these people. I can't explain how dumbfounded they were. I cannot explain how rewarded and how fulfilled they were when they saw that having put themselves out on a limb for Jesus Christ, that this thing happened not 6 months away, not 6 weeks away. It happened the very next Sunday. It came from a man that didn't even know us. It came from a man that we did not know him. He was a private in the army in Fort Bragg there. I think it's Fort Bragg or whatever it is there in Columbia, South Carolina. We didn't know who he was. The man looked as poor as Job's turkey. He was from Texas. He didn't look like he had a penny to his name. He was just a private in the army. Come to find out, he was from a very wealthy family. And for some reason or other, he said, I just wanted to give the church here something. He didn't give us $999. He didn't give us $1,001. He gave us $1,000. The bill was $1,000. Now, you explain that if you want to, if you can. I'll tell you what, we looked like a bunch of holy rollers climbing benches, you know what I mean? It was amazing at the joy and the happiness that characterized those people that day. I thought I was going to have to tie him down. It was bedlam. But it was wonderful, as we saw perhaps part of what he means here when it says the meek shall inherit the earth. But I don't even think that that's what it's talking about. I think that that may be part of the fringe benefit. What I really believe is what he's talking about here is what happened in the heart of Jim Smith whenever this group of followers of Jesus Christ told him, we know that you have no right to ask this of us, but because of our willingness to sacrifice our rights to fill your need, essentially that's what he saw. What happened in his heart is, I think, what Jesus Christ is talking about here. Because when this people, poor and without any real means of providing this money, when they guaranteed this man his rightful pay, which he had no right to, this man's heart was touched. The man's heart was warmed. The man's heart began to be conquered. And I'm confident that if we had said, Mr. Smith, we need you, and he wasn't a Christian, but if we'd said, we need you to build us another building, we don't really have the money right now, but we'll certainly see that you get everything that you need, everything that's yours that's coming to you, we need another building. There's not anything that would have convinced me that that man would not have done that. He was so overwhelmed by this gift that had been given him of $1,000. I think he would have given us anything that he had within reason. I think it would have been ours because of the fact that we had done this thing for him. I think that's what he's talking about here when he says, blessed are the meek, for they'll inherit the earth. Whenever you go through the door of meekness, people, you then touch the hearthstone of the hearts of other people. When you go beyond what's rightfully yours, you know, and give that to the person who has no right to it, when you go the second mile, when you sacrifice your rights in order to fill another person's need, then you go and touch their heart, and you begin to scale away the hardness. You begin to get down to the beautiful tenderness of heart. You begin to warm, and you begin to melt, and you begin to get to that heart where you conquer it, and you subdue it, and you bring it in, and it comes at your feet. This is what meekness does, not by force, but just simply by the sheer power of this thing of meekness. I think that's what this beatitude talks about. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. But then I want to show you something. This to me is the most beautiful thing that I think I've ever discovered, because it's the gospel. Meekness is the gospel of Jesus Christ wrapped up in one word. This is the message of the cross. And when you look back at Isaiah and listen to what Isaiah said, surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we thought he was smitten or stricken and smitten by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon him, and by his stripes we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray, and every man has turned to his own way, and yet Jehovah has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. You see what he's saying? Simon Peter, in contemplating that beautiful thought later on, hundreds of years later, made the statement that he himself, Jesus Christ, he himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that he might cause us to die to sin and live to righteousness. And he said, by his wounds we've been made well, Peter says. That's what he's talking about. This is what he was talking about The Apostle Paul, when he told the Corinthians, "You know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, how that though he was rich, yet for your sakes he became poor, that you through his poverty might become rich." Jesus Christ, though he was in the form of God, counted not the being on an equality with God a thing to be grasped or to be clutched to himself, but he emptied himself and took upon himself the form of a servant. And being found in human form, it says he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death on the cross. It's as though God were saying, "What can I do to bring man back to me?" And the gospel message is simply spread out before us in this very simple phrase: "I know what I'll do. I myself will forego my rights as God, and I will give my rights up and become man himself. I will myself bear his burden. I will pay for his sins. I'll pay the debt. I'll forego my right in order to fill man's need." And if that's not the gospel message, I don't know what it is. And to me, it's the most beautiful concept. It's the most beautiful attribute. It's the most beautiful quality of all the things perhaps that we'll study in this entire study. Blessed are the meek embodies the spirit of Jesus Christ as fully as anything else in the entire array of divine qualities. And that's what he wants out of you. He's looking for a people who will be willing to forego their rights to fill other people's needs. If you were to wrap this up in one human person or one human body, you'd wrap it up into the body of a mother. Because the quality that makes a mother, I think, is this quality of meekness. How much they forego of their rights to fill our needs. How much you mothers forego of your rights to fill the need of your children. When they're sick, getting up with them all hours of the day and night, that calls for meekness. It calls for the sacrifice of your own rights to sleep and to rest in order to fill the needs of one who is so dependent upon you. That's what God did. Thank God for this quality of meekness. Jesus Christ went his way of sacrificing himself so that you might come back to God. And he, through doing that, warms your heart. He, through doing this, causes you to be drawn to him, causes your hardness of heart to be melted away, and all that you are and all that you have laid at his feet in humble service, surrendering to his will in meekness. You want to know how to bridge the generation gap? Young people, do more than is required of you. Do more than your parents ask of you. When your dad asks you to go out and clean out the garage, once you've cleaned out the garage, if you see the car's dirty, boys, wash the car too. Don't just say, "Well, you didn't say wash the car. I cleaned out the garage. What more do you want of me?" But wash the car. It'll probably surprise him to death. He may drop his teeth if he's got false ones, but do it. Try it. Would you like to get the car Friday night? Now, I'm not telling you this so that you might do it with an ulterior motive, but if you'll simply do this, you'll inherit the whole automobile for Friday night. That's right. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who go the second mile. Blessed are those who forego their rights in order to fill their parents' needs. Parents, do the same thing for the children, and as the mother does, and the father should too. Forego your right, perhaps, to fish on Friday or Saturday in order to fill the needs that a son may have of being with him. Forego that, and I guarantee you there won't be any generation gap. Meekness is the bridge. This second mile is the bridge that bridges the generation gap. Jesus Christ is looking for a people who want to follow him to the extent that they will forego their rights in order to fill the needs of other people. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. When Jesus said, "Come to me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek." In other words, he's saying, you don't have to worry about what I'm going to tell you to do. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek. In other words, I have your good at heart. I don't want anything that's not good for you. He says, I'll take care of you. You'll be my brother then, and I'll see that you never lack for anything. So come on and take your yoke, take my yoke upon you and learn from me. I've got your good at heart, and I'll sacrifice myself to fill your needs. To me, that's the most beautiful concept in all the Bible. And Jesus Christ is looking for this in you. Do you possess this quality? Blessed are the meek, for they'll inherit the earth. Blessed are those who will go the second mile. Blessed are those who will forego their rights to fill another's need. Blessed are those who will sacrifice themselves in order to bring about the good for other people. This is the gospel of Jesus. This is the gospel of God. And in it is incorporated the very mind of Jesus Christ to such a degree that it defies description and almost defies understanding. But it's beautiful beyond words. May God bless us as we incorporate it into our lives tonight. Meekness, in terms of God, means surrender. As I said, it can be beautifully characterized here in the action of baptism. When a person surrenders himself and shows it in this beautiful action, he surrenders himself in meekness to God's will. If you would like to become a follower of this amazing man that we read about in the Scriptures, who has so affected history as he has, and who will so revise and revolutionize your life as he will, if you'll allow him to come in and have his reign in your heart, if you want to follow him, then let it be known tonight, as you meekly surrender to him, and then rise from your mourning, rise from your poverty of spirit, to be meek in the sense that you begin to relate to other people, putting their needs before your own, sacrificing yourself to fill their needs. This is Christianity, and I commend it to you, and I commend you to God. Will you come while we stand and sing?
Jesus is calling, calling, calling. Jesus is calling to you.